The Family Care.
From the Director, Department of Family Care, submitting an informational report regarding the potential impact of the 2012 capitation rate on the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care. This item also is going to the Committee on Finance and Audit, informational only, unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning, Ms. Ledger, Mr. Hodgson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, County Supervisors. My name is Maria Ledger. I'm the Director of the Department of Family Care. With me is Jim Hodgson, our Chief Financial Officer. What we have prepared for you is an informational report giving you a little bit of background information about the capitation rate for the Department of Family Care, and again, sort of a high-level overview of how that rate is developed. The reason we wanted to present this information to you is because the preliminary rate that the department has been notified of from the State Department of Health Services for their 2012 capitation rate represents a 2.9 decrease from our 2011 capitation rate. The state has left the door open for all of the managed care organizations, Milwaukee County Department of Family Care included, to provide them with some additional information, which we fully intend to do to secure a favorable adjustment to this initial rate that they have provided us with. However, as you know, this department likes to be able to, when we have to come back to the board with a change, we like it to be a positive change. So we spent a great deal of time and a lot of detail in looking at ways that we can continue to enhance operations and streamline the program, maximizing efficiencies, so that should the state not respond with that favorable adjustment, the program will be maintained as fiscally and operationally sustainable with the same high quality that people have come to expect from this. So if you look at your report, we've focused on a number of different areas where, again, these are things that we have been working on already. Some of them we have already implemented, and some we will continue to do on into 2012. We've taken a look at how we provide care management, transportation, day services, our community relocation efforts, and some other things, so that, again, we're able to meet whatever challenges come up with our 2012 capitation rate. If you'd like, I can sort of go through these sort of item by item. In the area of care management, as supervisors and Madam Chair are aware, the department contracts out with a number of different agencies for that care management piece, for those care managers and nurses who are assigned to every person who enrolls. We began the year with 22 agencies. Some of them are very large and some of them are very small. The challenge with some of our smaller agencies is because of the state-imposed enrollment caps, care management agencies, and really none of our other provider groups can count on any growth. Because whatever the number was in July is the number, and as people leave the program, if there are people that disenroll from the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care, say, two individuals disenroll, it is not a given that two individuals will come back in. So it presents a very challenging environment for those small agencies to be able to keep operations going. So we had conversations individually with all of them, encouraged our agencies to think about ways that they can work together and partner to effect some sort of joint venture or merger in whatever way made sense for them. Some of our agencies have elected to no longer provide care management but focus on their other lines of business. I would say probably 99% of our agencies have service contracts with us for services other than care management. So we will continue to look at ways, again, to encourage our individual agencies to work together in a way that will still preserve the services that they provide and their identity. But having a smaller number of agencies is administratively significantly easier for the department, and it's also without knowing when these caps are going to be lifted, it's just too challenging for small agencies to be able to be able to make a go of it. We're also looking at increasing the caseload size for those care management agencies. We have a number of agencies that with very high quality indicators who have more members assigned to care managers and nurses than others, so we're going to change the language in our contract about what that is like. By doing that, again, that'll reduce the labor costs for those agencies. And we also want to, while we're doing that, we want to make sure that we're in a position that as we continue to explore an integrated model, that we have more nursing time freed up within our care management agencies to be able to do that.
Supervisor Mayo and then Supervisor Rice.
Tell me more about the transportation. I got $2.5 million and also is there a rate that's about $15 per person? How did they come up with their rate?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayo, I'm sorry, your question is specifically in terms of that total cost savings?
Correct.
Okay. There's a number of things that, again, that we've begun to do already. One of them is that, and Mr. Hodson will jump in if I go too far off topic, but the department has negotiated a contract with a vendor who had been providing the rides for individuals who attend Goodwill Day programming. And so we were able to negotiate a contract with them individually at a lower rate. And now that rate is dependent somewhat on the volume of individuals who will utilize that particular vendor. So the more people who use that to go to Goodwill Day programming, the lower that rate will be. But it was, even at, I think, right now, with the current volume that we have, there's a 23% decrease in what we pay for that transportation agency to take those individuals to that program. So that's part of the savings there. We have also been expanding our transportation network for providers to provide non-medical rides. And looking at, when we talk about having teams look at utilization management, we really want to make sure that transportation, like every other service in the benefit package, is appropriate to meet an individual's outcomes. One of the very labor-intensive initiatives that we've started is looking at those individuals who live in substitute care settings, people who live in group homes and adult family homes. If you take, for instance, a home that has eight individuals residing who are enrolled in family care, as we ran all kinds of detailed information and looked at where they attended day programming and then the distance that they were traveling, in some cases we had eight people going six different directions in the morning. Some people may have been utilizing transportation to go to a day program that was 3 miles away. And no exaggeration, some people were utilizing transportation to go to a program 18 miles away. And so we looked at it and thought, if there's enough commonalities between this group of people that they can successfully reside in the same residential setting, there's enough of a variety within my provider network that we may be able to consolidate the number of places that individuals go and say, you know, this program that's 18 miles away, there's a program that provides that exact service for this type of individual that's 3 miles away. And it may be that somebody started going here when they lived over there. And as they moved, they never made that transition. So what we're doing is offering people the information about, you know, this one and this one are closer. Why don't you have a talk with that member and that guardian to see if this might make sense? No one wants to ride a van for an hour in the morning. So if we shorten their ride, we extend their time when they're actually engaged in meaningful activity at their day program, it makes it easier for the residential setting, and it certainly makes it easier for that transportation provider. That's where we're also going to realize some savings.
can I ask a follow-up question on that?
Sure.
For Supervisor Mayo's benefit, the other piece that we're also looking at is the residential scope of services is, it talks about the things that you as a group home provide. So one of the things that you as a group home are going to provide at this point is transportation. Again, keeping that more centralized rather than so that if an individual resides in your home, you can contract with another agency to provide the transportation. We have a number of group homes that are going to be doing that transportation themselves. And some of them are pretty excited about the opportunity. So, again, the combination of things where if you're not going, you know, again, six different places at an extraordinarily long distance, and coordinating that transportation is localized within the setting where you live, it's going to make sense for everyone, and it's going to be a more cost-effective solution. We're also looking at some of residential providers. Is there a way where some of that day service portion can be provided within the home rather than out of the home? Again, reducing transportation and giving members some more flexibility. You know, I was reviewing case notes for an individual with a developmental disability who is, I want to say, 84 years old, who had expressed to their care manager that they want to retire. I would, too, if I were 84 years old. So is there a way that this individual can retire from going to their workshop and still have some meaningful activity, still have something worthwhile to do during the day? But so it's all, there's a number of different ways that each of these initiatives, I think, really improves the quality of life for members, but it also reduces our utilization, our dependence upon transportation to get people out and about. And I think the other piece of it is looking at expanding our network of private providers. It certainly gives more opportunities to our community partners in terms of being able to provide services. It's probably one of the few places or one of the few provider groups where we're going to continue to want to expand that because I think there's lots of opportunities for smaller transportation providers within the community.
Thank you.
I have Supervisor Rice and then Supervisor Lipscomb.
My question is the process by which the state department determines the capitation rate. Is it a one-size-fits-all for all MCOs, or do they take into consideration special circumstances mm-hmm. in particular markets mm-hmm. and demographics, for example, Milwaukee County? Mm-hmm.
And I think on that one I will defer to Mr. Hudson, who's the capitation rate whiz.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Rice, the capitation rate is not a one-size-fits-all. They do consider things like urban versus rural wage settings. The unfortunate thing in the whole capitation rate process, though, is what they're doing right now is they're presently using the pilot counties, that would be the former Milwaukee County, La Crosse, Richland, Fond du Lac, and Portage, thank you. And then they're also utilizing data from Racine Kenosha. Now, that only represents seven counties in out of the 57 that are presently in family care. So the reason for not using the remaining data is what we keep hearing is due to volatility in data. So what's happened is the rates are being set based on data within those seven counties, and then there's an adjustment made for market demographics, also member demographics such as acuity, member intensity, intensity of services. That would be from the functional screen. There's a number of different variables that they use. We're actively, which is what Director Ledger has pointed out, we are actively pursuing some dialogue with the state on that, because what they have not really recognized is our expansion population. Our expansion population right now is they have not used that data. They've only used the data from our population pre-November of 2009. So we're confident that we can hopefully work something out. It's right now it's budget driven. That's the best I can explain now. And I know we listed the rates in here, and you'll notice that from 09 to or from 010 to 011, Milwaukee County's rate was 2813, and now it's 2733, which is on the low end of the spectrum compared to all other MCOs. So I think there's some argument to be made there that there may need to be an adjustment made, because the cuts that they have made are pretty significant.
You touched on the other question, and that is the memo says there's this range. So that's the range for capitation rates across all MCOs. Is that it?
Correct.
So one MCO gets one capitation rate?
It's a blended rate, correct.
Okay. And so we have not... it says CY 2012 was $27.33 to $34.69, but then it says the preliminary 2012 capitation rate is currently at $27.33. So are we at the very bottom of that?
Yes.
And that's, again, I don't understand the analysis that goes into that. How is it, you know, given the factors you're talking about in terms of acuity and demographics, how do we fall at the bottom of that formula?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Rice, a couple of things have happened here. Part of it is our population, we have a predominantly higher degree of over 60, so the frail elderly, and so the cost structure usually with that population is lower. The other part of that is Milwaukee County has done such a good job managing expenses, believe it or not, that it's kind of a double-edged sword. You're not, you know, while you're managing your expenses, your rates aren't going to increase as much. The other part of that, as I mentioned too, was the piece of the pie that we haven't factored in is presently the almost 1,600 people that are under 60, that cost data is really, their rates are being driven off of from other data from other counties. So
that's a new emerging population.
That's the population we enrolled anywhere from November of 2009 to present.
Right. So you said the distinguishing factor in Milwaukee County is that we are serving a predominantly frail elderly population. What are these other counties serving?
The industry mix for the target groups would be anywhere from the target groups are frail, elderly, physically disabled, and developmentally disabled. So when I refer to it, I'll say FEDDPD: frail, elderly, developmentally disabled, and physically disabled. The mix right now is about, for developmentally disabled is about 40-41%. We're about 22-23% and rapidly rising, because as we have disenrollments on the over 60, which unfortunately a lot of it is due to passing, we are now start to see a case mix shift. So our rate is being based on a mix of, you know, higher percentage of frail, elderly, and PD, and as that mix starts to change, and it is moving. In the last year, it's gone from 19% to well over 22%, and no cause of us, just due to changes in disenrollments and enrollments. So that is kind of the basis for us to sit down with the state and say, wait a minute, you have to consider the fact you've now got an enrollment cap on, and as we continue to start to lose more people over age 60, and we're presently seeing that. We're seeing our average disenrollments over the last 6 months have been 97 people over age 60, and 11.5 has been the average for under age 60. So we're starting to see that shift. And that's part of the reason for sitting down with the state and saying, you may not have factored all that in going in through the remainder of 2011 going into 2012.
Thank you. That's helpful. Can you just add anything in terms of why our mix is different from other counties in terms of a more significant frail elderly population?
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisor Rice, if you recall, the Milwaukee County Family Care CMO was the only pilot that started serving only frail elders. So while every other managed care organization served all three target groups from the day they opened their doors, in this particular managed care organization, until November of 2009, there were only persons over age 60 and over. Now, some of those individuals also had developmental disabilities as they aged in, as they went from 59 to 60, persons with physical disabilities and developmental disabilities. But for those first very pivotal years, that was the only population that was enrolling. So, and this is the only, bless you, this is the only, again, bless you, this is the only MCO that was configured in that manner. So you would expect to see those differences in terms of our population served.
And if I may add, if there had only been one MCO in this county, we would be well over 40% now. Some of those new enrollees that came in as of November 09 until present have gone to community care, mm-hmm. which would have been the under 60 population.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thanks. I have a follow-up on the transportation mm-hmm. question, but also a question on care management. They both really speak to the issue of whether, I mean, on their face, the efficiency sounds good, and you know, particularly, you know, it's nice to see $2.5 million saved here and $2 million here. Except that when I start to sort of read between the bullet points, I start to see things that I wonder whether that efficiency is degrading service. So, you know, I can see why why you would want to contract with fewer agencies, mm-hmm. for instance. But then when I think about the changes to caseload, mm-hmm. I have to believe that that means that that person's receiving mm-hmm. less attention than they were. And so, and then on the transportation side, similar sort of issues where certainly I appreciate, you know, negotiating tougher contracts and mm-hmm. getting savings on transportation, but then I have skepticism about the role of the role that we're playing in sort of dictating or pushing people to change providers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I live in the same house as my wife, but we don't see the same providers. You know, mm-hmm. so just so it's mm-hmm. I'm skeptical of that, and I think it's further highlighted by the fact that I don't know that it. So, if there was a real benefit mm-hmm. to do this, I would understand it. Maybe there's a mm-hmm. balancing act, but it seems that there isn't much benefit to us because in the end, you save $7.5 million, and the state dings you for $7.5 million, mm-hmm. and in the end, your net surplus doesn't even. Mm-hmm. It's not even a percentage point mm-hmm. benefit to you. And so what are we doing this for? We're doing this to become the lowest, you know, to fall from a mid-range provider to a low-range mm-hmm. provider, and then over time, what's the effect going to be on people choosing us as the mm-hmm. provider? And so I think it could be a long-term losing proposition to find ourselves as mm-hmm. the lowest-cost provider, even mm-hmm. though on its face that sounds good, that we would be the lowest-cost provider. So I guess mm-hmm. I'd ask how you would respond to that as a long-term spread by the best years.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, those are excellent points, and let me address those one by one, and if I forget, help me out. As we look at the case management ratios, again, our Chief Clinical Officer and Chief Operating Officer have pulled an extraordinary amount of data together into what we call a balanced scorecard of how each of these care management agencies perform on a number of different measures, how timely they are with required notices of action, with visits to members, all of those things. And so we continue to look at that, and what we found was that we also did earlier this year a very detailed look at what individual ratios are from agency to agency. And what we found was that there were some agencies, again, who had staffed up in anticipation of expansion and not expecting to have enrollments capped. So when you have, and I had a conversation with one of my agencies and said, with the number of staff that you have on board right now, and if I look at the number of people that are assigned to your agency, you've got care managers who are serving a much smaller number of people. So if the sort of the standard, more or less, was 40 members per care manager, because you staffed up, again, with the best of intentions, you've got perhaps care managers who are looking, who are seeing people, but maybe 25 to 30. So what they're doing then is, I said, they're going to be doing, there's going to be additional activity that isn't going to be what's really necessary to meet the member's outcome, because they're there and they have to do something productive in their day. No agency is going to pay a social worker or a nurse to sit idle because someone doesn't need something. They'll do, you know, they're going to engage in some level of activity. And we looked at some of our higher performing agencies, and we looked at where their members are situated, and we also factored in different populations, because there's an argument to be made that people who serve, say, a higher behavioral health population, they have more pressing needs. In agencies that perhaps serve more individuals who reside in nursing homes have lower needs. So even if you balance all of that out, we had agencies that were serving upwards of that sort of benchmark of 40 who had extremely high quality. All their needs, their members' needs were being met. The member satisfaction surveys were very high. So we take a look at, you know, and we have also done a lot of work on behalf of the care management agencies to take out a lot of the things that they were spending time documenting have been automated on for them. So it isn't the seeing a member or calling a member and following up on services that they need, but all of the time that has to be spent doing, you know, a lot of the paperwork that's required, that we require because the state requires to see it, that has been automated for their on their behalf. So if we're able to take down the things that are necessary but don't actually at the end of the day make a difference in the life of a member, but are still a very critical component of the program, then you've got more time to actually do the things that are the reasons why people got into human services in the first place. You're helping individuals, you're checking in on them, you're working with their families. So again, if we didn't have the quality scores to demonstrate that this can be done, we wouldn't sacrifice quality. I mean, we've said this all along, there is no way that you can cut someone's rate to the bone so that they can't staff sufficiently to meet somebody's needs and expect to make a go of it. That isn't the reason the organization doesn't exist to turn our profit or as a financial vehicle. The reason the organization exists is because we support a very vulnerable population. So we keep that always in the forefront of how we're doing it. But the bottom line is, because we're not in a race to the bottom where, you know, I wanted to receive the lowest capitation rate of any managed care organization in the state of Wisconsin. But if that is eventually what's going to happen, if we are not successful in receiving an adjustment from the state, then you know, I have to be able to adjust in terms of not wanting to cut. I mean, the services that are in the benefit package are in the benefit package. There isn't an option to say we simply won't do this thing anymore. We won't support people in this sort of a setting or that sort of a setting. And we never, ever have used our capitation rate as a ceiling beyond which we won't go. We have some extraordinarily high-cost members who receive services in the community. And quite honestly, some of, I think, our highest-cost members are not people who live in nursing homes, but people who have 24-hour in-home support for very complex medical needs. So, and we have individuals who only need the support of a care manager. So it's, you know, by being able to sustain that mix, the program as a whole works out. But we don't look at it and say, this is my cap rate, and I can't do anything past that, because we know that there are services that people that require that are going to go above that rate. And as we look at the transportation piece, I appreciate the fact that, you know, yeah, every member of your family doesn't go to the same place every day. Wouldn't that be a sort of a crowded place to be? But again, when we've talked to members, we had an individual, I want to say maybe 18 months, 2 years ago, that we were able to do some very creative things with their residential setting. It was initially brought to our attention because of the rate of the group home provider, but there was lots of other things that went on. But long story short, we were able to work with this particular group home provider in a way that allowed this individual with some pretty significant behavioral needs to stay in the home that they had become accustomed to, but by moving someone to this floor as opposed to that floor, this individual was able to stay there. Someone else was able to move into the home, and we actually put together a little video about them. We had two people who were able to walk to their day program instead of take a van, and they were so happy about it. Because, again, no one wants to spend that much time on a van. No one wants, even if you get in and then it has to stop and, you know, pick up four other people along the way, that's not a meaningful part of your day. The good part of your day is when you get up in your home and you have breakfast and then you go to your day program and you're able to do the work that you want to do at your day program. The great part of your day is not getting there. So, again, it's not a you must, but in one instance where I personally had a conversation, granted an email conversation, but that's what passes for communication, with the care manager and said, you know, you have an individual who lives here and they go here every day. Are you aware that there's a program right here? And her response back was, no, I had no idea. So I said, well, take a look. Go out with the family, see what you think. Because it's a pretty big network. We have a network of 900 providers. So we've been able to utilize one of our staff in partnership with Parks and using this GIS mapping software to say, you live here, the day programs that can meet your needs that are, you know, within a smaller radius are here. Go see. And in some cases, it's not going to work. But in some cases, it can. So to the extent that it can, I think it makes sense to offer that as an option to individuals. I also identified two people who live in a group home that's very far off the beaten path in the southwest corner of the county. There isn't anything that's any closer than where they go. There just isn't. They're off Orion Road, and that's that. So no matter what I do, I even looked in Racine and Kenosha, there's nothing that's shorter than about 12 miles for them. What are you going to do? You know, they go 3 days a week. They like the socialization. So there are times when it's going to work, and there are times when it won't. But I think it's important for us, again, not only to, we need to be able to adjust to whatever comes our way from Madison, but it is a benefit for members if they can. If it has a detrimental effect on a member, it isn't going to happen. And again, if there's a change, members always have the right, or their family members or powers of attorney or legal guardians have a right to file a grievance to say, no, I don't. I really like this. I like going here. This is where I'm comfortable. This is where I know everyone. But again, it may be, you know, when we look at trying to make sure that we're...
I got to interrupt because I'm afraid, sure, I'm going to lose some of these
points. Okay.
Do they have a right after the fact to file a grievance, or do they have a right at the time of the change to say, I don't want to change? I mean, what...
Madam Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, if I'm going to, more specifically, let's say you were receiving a service and the team has determined that this isn't appropriate for you anymore. And remember, the member's a part of the team. I have an obligation to give you a notice and say, this isn't necessary for you any longer. You've maximized your benefit of whatever it is. And so at the point where I have to give you a notice, that's before the change takes place. And then you have an opportunity to file an appeal on that before the change takes place. So there's a notice period in there where there's an ability for people to raise an objection to whatever change is proposed for them. And that's in advance of anything concrete happening that would be different for them.
I'm trying to resist to getting into all the minutia, but I guess my overall theme, mm-hmm, of what I'm saying still withstands, that I have a concern, mm-hmm, about the extent to which the, mm-hmm, agency is pushing, mm-hmm, for an efficiency basis, is pushing, mm-hmm, where someone receives the services.
I'd just like to add something. One of the things we found out, we created a work group with one of our providers, with our transportation providers, some of the ones that are larger ones within our network, and we're meeting on a regular basis. One of the things we found out, 30% of the time, there's either a no-show or a cancellation. They come up to the door and don't get paid. Nobody's there to get picked up, and they don't get paid. And they are frustrated. Now, those are things we can work on, because if we can reduce their cancellation rate and decrease that, their operating margins are going to increase. They're ecstatic about some of the stuff we're doing right now. They're looking forward to some of these efficiencies because they also feel it with the members on the who are complaining about the long rides. I mean, what's kind of difficult for us. I have the 6-month financials here for all the MCOs. And the community care is receiving a $90 per member per month add-on for risk loss share, or about $4 million so far. Where Milwaukee County never received any of that. And I think, you know, truthfully, I can appreciate we're concerned about, you know, what it might do for quality. What's happened is the whole budget process at the state level has now trickled down all the way to family care, and this has been some of the product, a rate cut. And now, and what's starting to happen is we're finding that it's going to mean consolidation, larger volumes, you know, which ultimately leads to, or could lead to, quality issues. Mm-hmm. But that's how things get balanced in the equation. And we're trying to work with the providers to avoid that from happening, but also trying to balance what we are facing as a daunting task. This is the worst this operation has seen since 2004. And there's no guarantee we'll go to Madison and Department of Health Services will come back and say, sure, we'll give you another $30 add-on to your rate, or $40. What we're hoping is we're able to successfully convince them, because we feel we have sufficient evidence to support our position. But if it really gets down to they don't have any money, then we'll be faced with this. And truthfully, we will then be put in a position, if we do nothing, we will be in a position 1 year later to that we'll be under plan of correction because we won't meet our solvency requirements. So that's kind of the vicious circle we're going through. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to find, it's kind of nipping and tucking and trying to figure out what it is we can do without disrupting the whole equation of quality, members, outcomes, the services, their expectations, and also our providers. Because we don't want to lose our providers within our network, too. So, I mean, it's really hard right now.
Well, and if I... I just wanted to add, Madam Chair and Supervisor Lipscomb, I think to the extent that the board is concerned about the quality of services for members is what separates this organization and this county. So I would like to think I'm probably one of the few in the proud who I welcome your continued interest in that, because it's that sort of thing. It's that interest from the board and from the public that makes sure that we stay on target and on focus. So I mean this sincerely. I welcome your questions and your concerns about it, because I think if it were otherwise, this board were only concerned about the bottom line of what we were doing, there would be very little utility in continuing to do it.
I just had a follow-up, because one of on the $7.5 billion, so what I sort of presented them as Washington,
sure.
Another, but which one comes first? Is it that we made $7.5 billion in savings or efficiencies, and then that drove that rate in the last computation down, or had we not done that, would we be facing the $7.5 billion deficit?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, it's a combination of not just our efforts, but also the efforts of other MCOs in the whole managed care process. In the last 12 months, the actual cost data, they've seen a 6.5% decrease on average for all those MCOs that they use the cost data for. So this is a reflection of not just Milwaukee County, but this would be community care in Racine, Kenosha. This would be Portage. This would be all those MCOs that they're using the data. So it's a combination of that. So the answer to your question is yes, it's the changes that were made, cost efficiency savings from a prior year that's moving forward, but it's based on several MCOs, not just Milwaukee.
Okay. Madam Chair, Supervisor.
Your moves are going to drive their numbers down over time.
Well, it's to help balance, yeah. It would impact.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. No, definitely. I know this has been a contentious issue, so I want to make sure that all of our questions get answered. And just FYI, the Department on Aging's Resource Center had a public hearing last week, and transportation was huge. A lot of those individuals there had community care. They were not happy In fact, there was at least one horrible story that was shared. But transportation was a huge issue, and I mean, we had Latino seniors in the crowd that were like, I don't even use the van anymore just because, you know, I have to go here, and then in order to get there, I have to drive around for 3 hours on the van, and it takes me, you know, it should take me 15 minutes to get to St. Francis, and it takes me, you know, in 3 hours or 6 hours. One lady said she sits on the van all day, and so it is something that's definitely on the radar. Supervisor Dmitrievich and then Supervisor Jurcik.
Thank you. On that very matter about transportation, I feel as if it was really originally Supervisor Mayo's question, and I asked it twice now at budget, what it was to, you know, paratransit and Milwaukee County Transit. Can we just take a quick and simple, not a long explanation, and talk about what the fares are for people? Because there's been, I'm hearing two or three different stories.
Well, there's two or three different fares.
Yeah, but I guess the thing is like, what it is now, because I see your 2011 and your 2012 plan here, if these are even related, but I guess the Madam Chairman, the major question I have is, obviously the Finance Committee, I feel like this is very pertinent to what we're talking about here, Finance Committee did adopt an amendment to decrease the increase from the county executive's budget, but the question still lies, if you're a family care client, what will your fee be next year? That's a very simple question, but I've been having a lot of trouble finding out the answer. Yes.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Ledger, do you have a three-tier answer to that?
I mostly have a thank you to Madam Chair and Supervisor Dmitrievich. I like the simple, uncomplicated question.
Yeah, it's been very confusing.
The current fare for family care members who utilize paratransit is $1,580?
It's $1,580 to family care.
Per one-way ride.
For one-way ride.
Right. And remember that transportation, obviously, is something that's in our benefit package. So when an individual needs to utilize any transportation service, whether it's paratransit or one of these private providers, their care managers sit down with them, they put together the plan, they put in the authorization, and it's family care them. And the program, because it's part of the benefit package, the program pays for that service the way that we pay for home-delivered meals or group homes or any other service that's authorized on behalf of a member.
So, and just to add to this, not too complicated, but $1,580 is what we're presently paying paratransit, but that is not their true cost of that ride. That true cost for that ride is probably about $10 to $15 more, which is being paid by Milwaukee County through tax lift.
Right.
Okay. Just so we understand, because at 1 year, 2 years ago, we had a budget surprise where they wanted the full cost of that ride would have been put into our, well, in DSC's budget, in our budget, and that would have been catastrophic.
Yeah.
So, just so you
know. Okay, so then for 2012, Madam Chairman, with the changes, I know they're still changing, and before us is actually the budget, but is it just the same base pay? There's no other changes because of this capitation increase. Is anything being passed along to the client, or is it just the same?
No, nothing passed on to the client. We took up what we're charged.
So in 2012, it'll still be that base pay, or base fee, I should say, and then whatever change, the board obviously is working on that right now.
What do you mean by base?
The 15.8, yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But then if we, like I said, we're still deliberating what the final increase will be.
Correct.
That will just be on top of that.
Right.
We had people testifying before us saying otherwise.
No, what you just said is correct.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, Supervisor Dmitrievich, part of the, I think the reason this gets to be such a confusing issue is because, you know, you have the cash fare, you have the fare that people in family care pay. I would assume that whether you're enrolled in family care through Milwaukee County or family care through community care, that rate is the same. There's also a large number of people that are enrolled in IRIS, in the state's self-directed supports program, and I have no information about what that rate or how that works. Okay. So, and I don't know how that's controlled on the transit side. I know what happens in my shop. So, but I think when people talk about it, sometimes they forget, you know, that there are different populations of individuals for whom transportation is a covered service.
And just so you know, well, part of what we've tried to do is expand our transportation network. We're adding more vendors. So, you know, we'll have more competition, and what we're hoping to do is not be as maybe dependent on the county fair transit system, which then we'll have a network of our own to provide the services, and there won't be this pressure placed on the county budget as well, because there's this subsidization there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, great. Supervisor Joseph.
Thank you. I'm just going to follow up because I was at the same meeting with Supervisor Davis. If I'm understanding this, Family Care pays $15.82, and in addition, the passenger pays, well, currently it's $4.50. That's not paid extra.
No, Madam Chair, Supervisor Drissick, if you're enrolled in Family Care, there is no money out of your pocket for rides that have been authorized.
Thank you. That answers that question. And then the 1.5 brokerage money that was put in for transportation, how does that fit in here? That's a totally different program? So you don't deal with that?
Right.
All right. Now, let me go back to the... you indicated that one of the things you're doing are consolidating the services. Mm-hmm. And you know I've had that conversation with St. Anne's Intergenerational Center, which is in my district. And what happens when you're maximizing your efficiencies, you are minimizing their efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And there has got to be some balancing on that. Because of your changes, they're now paying unemployment insurance, for example. So the agency has got to rely on Milwaukee County to make reasonable decisions. And I there's probably all kinds of examples like that. Finally, your reserves of $15.8 million. You know that, what was it, 2 years ago, with your reserves, your high reserves, what did the state do? They came in and pulled your money out. And I get concerned about that, because if you're going to maximize your efficiencies on the backs of either agencies or on the backs of the population we're serving, to make sure you have very generous reserves, you're ultimately perhaps going to lose Milwaukee County money. So I caution you about doing that. I'd almost rather see you sometimes be more reasonable with the service and less concerned about your reserves, to a point. And I understand you're playing a very careful balancing point there. But I think you've got to make those reasonable decisions, and it's not always to increase reserves. So that's just the thing I see on that. And finally, if again, the capitation stuff, I can listen to it 100 times and not make sure I really understood it all. But if I can just ask the question, the elderly, the physically disabled, and the developmentally disabled, they all have the same capitation rate? Is that what we're saying?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Jerzyk, yes, it's a blended rate. The cost structures are different, but when you blend them together, it becomes a weighted
cost structure.
The actual cost of the developmentally disabled population will be different than the actual cost of the frail elderly.
And I assume you follow that.
Yes.
That you separate those things out.
Those are separately identified and reported to the state, correct.
But the capitation rate for all of those groups is the same.
It's a blended rate based on your case mix. If we have fewer DD, that cost structure will be weighted such.
So there's a formula.
So if you can think of it this way, in simple terms, if we had a third, a third, a third, we would get a third of the real high DD cost structure, a third of the PD, and a third of the frail elderly, and that would be blended.
Which gives you some incentive, if you will, to service that population that has the higher rate, so your blended rate is higher.
Well, and Madam Chair, Supervisor Jerzyk, we aren't able to choose what population we serve.
Well,
because
you are in a way, because I know you've made the decision on the waiting list to split that equally, even though the elderly population might be a bigger population. Mm-hmm. So certainly in that area you have.
No, Madam Chair and Supervisor Jerzyk, just to be clear, the Department of Family Care has no say in terms of how the waiting list numbers are decided. That I can't say how those are apportioned out. We don't have any control or any input until someone enrolls in this program. So those decisions in terms of how attrition slots are assigned are based on our decisions that are made by the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Aging. I simply am there when someone elects to come into the program. I can't say how those slots are going to be allotted.
I hear what you're saying.
I bet I could.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Jarsik. Anything further from the committee? Mm-hmm. I do have a card from Barb Beckert, who looks like she's jumping out of her skin to get to the table.
How unusual.
Without further ado, come on down.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Supervisors. This is a subject that I am very passionate about, so I appreciate the opportunity to talk. And thank you very much, Supervisors, for all the good questions you have been asking, because I guess I'm supposed to introduce myself. I'm Barbara Beckert from Disability Rights Wisconsin. Our agency is a protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities in the state, and that includes serving as the ombudsman for the family care program. So we have a contract with the state to do that. So we serve people from all over the state who are in the family care program who are having problems around changes in their service plan, denial of services, et cetera. And, of course, that includes, a number of cases from Milwaukee County. And, I appreciate that it's a balancing act between being fiscally sustainable and providing appropriate services that support the goals of the program, which are supposed to be community integration. I am very disturbed that I feel like the balance is shifted too far towards, how can we be most cost-effective. I just would like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First of all, the proposal that you see here, this rate that the concern is about regarding the capitated rate, this is a preliminary capitated rate. This is not going in effect until January, if it goes in effect at all, and I predict that there is a very strong likelihood that Milwaukee County MCO is going to be successful in challenging this and getting a higher rate based on the changes in their population, which, as you've heard, for over a decade, they served only older adults. So it's not at all surprising that they have the lowest capitated rate. That reflects the less costly population they served. As they slowly begin to serve more costly individuals, that rate should change. Last year, they challenged their rate, and they were successful. So I'm very concerned about the proposals that I see here, a couple that I'd specifically like to call to your attention, and some of these are already underway. In the areas of transportation, again, no one more than I wants to see people continue to have access to transportation. But again, there needs to be a balance, and I'm concerned that some of the changes here may have an impact in terms of people's independence as well as safety issues. What I've heard from people, both consumers and others out in the field, for example, people who are running day programs, is that they're already seeing changes where residential programs are now being told, well, you need to provide transportation services now because we're trying to save money here and that's now a service you're going to provide. So what's the impact for people? First of all, they don't have the same independence in terms of transportation. You talk about sitting on the van for a long time. People are being told, okay, this is your opportunity. If you want to go shopping, we're going now, and this is where we're going. So people aren't having the same opportunities for independence and community integration. It's like, this is the choice you have, and this is the only choice you have. In addition to that, I worry about the safety issues. Back in 1998, our agency was involved in a lawsuit against Milwaukee County because of significant safety issues with the paratransit system. At that time, there were many providers. I think there were around 20 providers. And there actually was a loss of life. A young woman lost her life because her wheelchair was not properly secured in the van. And as a result of that, there were some positive changes made, and the number of paratransit service providers was significantly reduced, and I think additional oversight and safety measures were put in place. And what I hear now from some of the people in the community is they're concerned. They're seeing a lot more providers out there. Some of them may be doing a good job, but that some of them are not and do not have the experience especially serving people with very significant disabilities. So I know that an audit of paratransit was proposed as part of the work of the Finance Committee. I would ask, is there a way that we can include in that audit in some way the new services that are being provided through family care? Because it's very important that there be adequate quality and oversight. And the fact that such a broad range of providers are being brought on board, I'd like to know what are the quality measures to ensure that there's adequate safety and training, and also that consumers are not losing their ability to do to support the outcomes that they have in their plan, that it's not all about, you know, as you said, Supervisor Lipscomb, well, you all live in the same house, so you're all going to the same provider. That's not the model that family care is supposed to put forward. In addition, I'm very concerned in a similar vein about the changes that are put in here with day providers, day program providers. What's being proposed is that we would have a model within residential facilities to enable greater member choice and flexibility, so that the model would be, instead of people going to a day program at another location like they currently do, that there would be the opportunity for people to stay in the same group home where they currently live. So what I worry about is again, that you will see further reduction of choices for people, that instead of promoting the community integration that this program is supposed to be about, that people are going to be stuck in a very institutional setting, and that is what most of these group homes are. They aren't, many of them are not very home-like, and that these facilities are going to be providing substandard day programs, and that they aren't going to have the, and they're going to be with the same people all the time. They aren't going to have the opportunity to get out in the community. Yeah, people might not go to the convenient neighborhood day program, but that may be because they have relationships, they have friendships at the day program they go to, and maybe it has services that are better suited for them. You know, I would also ask you to remember that this is a vulnerable population, so we can say, well, yeah, people have choices, and if they don't like the choice that we're going to make for them, you know, with their consent, then they have the opportunity to file a grievance. This is a group that people are, first of all, may have some cognitive limitations that make it difficult for them to understand their rights, and secondly, I'm telling you, people are scared. They're very afraid to rock the boat. You just heard a little bit about the very confusing issue of the paratransit rates. This is another area where we think that there are some legal issues. Within family care, an agency rate is charged, currently $15.80 for a one-way ride. We believe that individuals still have the opportunity to go as individuals and buy paratransit service tickets at the current rate, which is $3.25. There's we hope with the Dmitrievich and Broderick Amendment will be at $4 moving forward. We believe individuals have the opportunity and the right to go and buy those tickets individually at MCTS and pay the rate that the public is charged. These are for services outside of their family care plan. They want to go to church. They want to visit a family member. Well, MCTS had been asking them to sign forms saying, you know, I'm not in family care or IRIS. And if they said that they were, then they were saying that they would have to pay the agency rate. Well, they're buying those tickets as individuals. We believe that's not legal. We did meet with MCTS, and we're seeking a federal opinion as to whether or not that policy is legal. The reason I'm telling you this is, again, to indicate how scared people are when we've told people, you've got the right to go and buy those tickets for $3.25 if it's outside of your family care plan, and these are rides you individually want to do. People said, but my social worker told me I don't want to get in trouble. You know, I'm scared to do that. There's a lot of fear. So I think what we want to do is ensure that we continue to have policies and programs that support consumer choice and support community integration instead of putting in place models that are going to discourage and decrease that. I understand that we have a fiscal balancing act here, but I would remind you that this program has $16 million in reserves, and my understanding is that at the Finance Committee tomorrow, they're going to be having a fund transfer which is going to increase those reserves. So where is the balance here? We can't just be cost-driven. We have to support the goals of the program, and I think the point that was made that if we go too far in terms of limiting people's choices, that some people are going to walk with their feet and eventually it's not going to be an attractive choice for people. So I really appreciate the questions you've asked today. We would be delighted to be a resource in any way. I think the parent who spoke today was very impactful. If it would be helpful to you to hear from some of the family care members who are on the front lines and who are experiencing some of these changes and how they impact their lives, you know, we would, you know, like to provide that opportunity. You know, your time here is limited. I know you have a big agenda, so I've already gone on for a long time. But thank you for listening. And again, you know, I note that this is an informational report, and I guess, you know, I'm wondering why that is, because, you know, as policymakers, I think that you've asked great questions and that you have an active role and responsibility to make in some of the very important decisions that are being made that will have a direct impact on the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in our community. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. All right. We've had very significant conversation on this item today. Seeing no further comments or questions, this was an informational item. If you have questions that emerge after this meeting, by all means, please contact Ms. Ledger. She's happy to, very happy to get back to you with that information. She lives for it. She lives for it. I have her on speed dial. All right.